question.
Hi, I encourage you to sit next to someone you don't know.
I'm a Unitarian Universalist. I don't want to know people.
If you're just coming in, I highly encourage you to sit next to somebody who you do not know. And also, please do sit next to someone, because we have discussions on the floor as well. Please sit next to someone who you don't know. I encourage you to sit with someone who you don't know. And please do sit with someone so that you can engage in the conversation. Okay, so now it is 1:15, so we are going to start this workshop. Welcome to our workshop. I think it's called Stories of Unitarian Universalists of Color. My name is Yuri Yamamoto. I'm the Director of Music at Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Raleigh. I'd like to first introduce three co-editors of this book project. Here's Tim Hanami and Chandra Snell and myself. And this project started maybe 18 months ago out of just one Tim's email to the group. There's a Google group for the people of color, UU of color, and he started that chain of events. So I would like to invite Tim, Chandra, and myself to just tell you a little bit about what this project mean to us. You go first.
The thought of writing a book came because of my past. I became an atheist. I used to be a Christian, a Protestant, but I became an atheist because of racism. And after, you know, becoming a member of Troop Church in Pasadena, you know, my pastor introduced me to drum, and I started to like drum. But then after hearing, you know, I guess conversing with people from drum, there were issues that were facing within their church. So I said, hey, why not write a book? Let's do something about that so we could share, you know, the people within the UU churches, you know, the challenges we face as people of color. So that was the origins or the evolution of the book. And everyone went for it. They said, cool, let's do it. So this is how it began.
Yes.
Oh,
okay. So the drum means the diverse, revolutionary, Unitarian, Universalist, multicultural ministries. And it is the group of Unitarian Universalists of color. A number of us are members of the drum, and I see many of you. And actually, drum is a sponsor of this event, so I really should have mentioned that. And also, to just say, many people have contributed to the Faith 5 fundraiser so that we could be here. So I thank you for that support. And those of you who are just coming in, I encourage you to sit with somebody you do not know. And also, please do sit near someone so we can engage in conversation. Thank you. Chandra?
Well, basically, just I want to echo, of course, what Tim said. And the process for me was, well, in terms of how the project got started, that pretty much is corresponds with my memory of it. But I would say that writing about my experience as a person of color within the UU Church has been just very enlightening for me personally and theologically, you know, just writing down my journey. You know, we all live our journeys, but it's something about when you see it just written down, you can make, and I think that's the power of storytelling. Because we're able to, you know, when we're living life, it seems kind of random. And it's only in looking back that we can discern patterns and we can kind of make sense of things. So I was able to make sense of my walk just spiritually, just theologically, just, you know, from the act of writing it down. So that in and of itself I have found to be very powerful. And not only that, but just sometimes we think as individuals that that our problems are so but you realize that no, others have experienced, you know, if not the same thing, then something similar. And I also think that in and of itself can be very empowering. So that's kind of my take on it.
Thank you. And again, those of you who came in recently, please do sit with someone, but someone you don't know. Thank you. And my name is Yuri. And for me, actually, it's been, again, like Chandra, writing my story was really revealing about who I am and what my relationship with Unitarian Universalism, and also revisiting my racial identity crisis moment at the GA a few years ago. It really taught me about who I am. But also speaking with potential contributors and also reading people's stories. For example, Tim is Japanese American, third generation, and I am a first generation, which in Japanese community means an immigrant from Japan, and our stories are totally different. So it's been really eye-opening for me, and it's I really enjoy that, being able to share some of the about our project today. Okay, so now I'd like to introduce our panelist, Reverend Carlton Smith, Carlton Elliott Smith. And Reverend Sunshine Wolf, and the Reverend Jennifer Kwong. And because we are all going to be engaged in conversation today, I like to go over a little bit of points in terms of how we can be together in community. So when we talk among ourselves, and let's take turns, and then let's listen attentively and with respect. And also, please honor confidentiality. So what you hear from your fellow participants, let's not go out and say, well, such and such said this, and so on. And also, no judgment. And please ask for clarification, but no judgment. And assume good intentions, and also let's allow ourselves to make mistakes. So let's go into, is anybody want to add to that list? Okay, thank you. So now I'd like to jump into some questions. And we had, I think, 13 stories, and the panelists have read them all. So my first question to the panelists, now I'd like this Sunshine to start on this one, is what draw people of color to Unitarian Universalism?
The stories had all kinds of reasons, but the most common one seemed to be that they liked our theology, our philosophy of being, particularly the principles and the idea that multiple religious traditions are welcome, We had many people who felt like in their Christian communities that they were not welcome to be who they are, or they weren't allowed to consider other theological ideas. And we also had a number who were interfaith families and found a home in our religious tradition because their multiple faiths that they were raised with were welcome within Unitarian Universalism. I think that a lot of people of color come to our congregations because of the hope of our social justice commitments, and we'll talk about some of the struggles with that in a little while, but I do think that there's some hope that our vision for what we can be as a people lives into what people of color need for the future of this world and for us to be able to survive as whole beings, whole spirits in this world. So I think that starts us off.
And please just add to that your perspectives, both panelists.
Let's see. I just want to make sure I get the question right.
So the question was, what draw people of color to Unitarian Universalism?
Thank you. What draws? Well, I think what I want to do is engage just like a little tiny bit with the with our audience here. So generally, what would you say? What would you think draws somebody to Unitarian Universalism, or what drew you as an individual, regardless of your ethnicity, into Unitarian Universalism? Maybe just to hear from five people, just very briefly, just a word or two. Yes, please. Suspension of judgment. I think that I would say that's one. Yes.
Sometimes you have to build your own identity.
Uh huh.
As a person of color.
Yeah.
And the church is very supportive of everybody putting together their identity. So for someone of mixed ethnicity, that's a wonderful support to find in the world.
So the ability to identify yourself for yourself. Yeah, got that. A couple more here. Okay, great. Over on this side in the red.
My parents were.
I'm sorry. No, I'll just repeat. If you just say it again, I'll repeat it for you. Sorry.
Caring
community, theological ideals, and openness, as was mentioned before. Please in the red. The pressure to attend church as agnostics, and that's how you end up as Unitarian. One more. Was there one more? Somewhere? Yes, in the purple.
I didn't have to be a theist.
Did not have to be a theist. I think those are all similar reasons why, you know, I don't know if the panelists would agree or not. Jennifer, what do you think?
Well, I think from what I've read, it certainly resonated that for theological reasons, a lot of people of color find Unitarian Universalism to be liberating, whether it's because they're agnostics or atheists, or they just don't believe in the Trinity like they were taught growing up, perhaps. And similar to how Tim was sharing his story earlier. And what was interesting as well is that when you talk to white people, however, the majority of the time, the reason is community. And it's just a lot more difficult for people of color to find a sense of community in a predominantly white denomination. And so I do find it interesting to have that disparity in terms of motivation for how people initially encounter Unitarian Universalism.
I think I would add to that that there's a, at least as a Native American person, I sometimes feel like I have to straddle multiple communities for all of me to be welcome. And so, for example, within Unitarian Universalism, as a transgender person, as a person who has liberal theology and social mores and those kinds of things, Unitarian Universalism has been a home. Sometimes I struggle with the Native American portion of me being involved, but I see within us the greatest, most expansive welcomeness possible. And so that has been part of that homemaking, is the potential for welcoming all of who we are, not just parts.
Thank you. And just to add to that question, sometimes I have heard people say maybe Unitarian Universalism is, too difficult or not not appropriate for the people of color, but that, it doesn't sound like that from your experiences and stories.
Yeah, if I understand what you're saying, you're talking about the idea that because of being in a historically marginalized location, there might be some more strength found in a religion that gives certainty, and that's not necessarily something that we do. But I don't think that that's the case. I think that, I think that certainly people go to religions that have an answer because they need some certainty in their lives, but I think that there's also some potential and possibility of hope when you know that your path is welcome as much as anyone else's, mm-hmm. and in a religion that really stands for community at the core of it, even if we don't always succeed. Right.
Thank you. So now I would like you to get into pair with somebody, and hopefully somebody you don't know. And so the question, so the story you will share with each other. Okay, please listen. So I know you're ready to share. That's great. And I would like to share with each other what drew you to Unitarian Universalism. And you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Together.
Three minutes total. You have 1 more minute to finish up your conversation. Now, time is over. Time is up. You've seen this before? In schools, maybe. So let's move to the next question. Carlton, I would like you to lead this one. So what kind of people of color are in Unitarian Universalist congregations? I mean, I realize we can never generalize this, but we had stories and you all have experiences.
Mm-hmm. Who's in our people of color in our Unitarian Universalist congregations? I would say the word that comes to mind first is resilient. It takes a lot, and I'll just backtrack a little bit from my own personal story. I'm just thinking about having grown up in an African American United Methodist Church, and there's a story or two in the book, one of the chapters in the book that are about people having grown up in the segregated South and how you have the black church over here and the white church over there in the same denomination. So, you know, coming from that, even though I was in post-segregation times myself. But it takes something to make a conscious choice, especially if you work in a context where your ethnic identity is already not affirmed, which is commonly the case if you're in some sort of corporate setting or nonprofit setting, often is the case, to make a choice to do that during the week and then go on the weekend in your free discretionary time and show up at a congregation where you're going to have to do more of that same work and that same translation. I'd say people with a high commitment to social justice who embrace the possibility that and the promise of Unitarian Universalism, regardless of the outward sign, that we have a long way to go before we are actually fulfilling on that in our communities, just given the pervasive racism which we live and breathe from day to day. So that's what comes to mind for me in terms of like who's in the congregations. We're talking a bit before this session started just about education levels and how there tends to be, if you were to poll your typical person of color in a Unitarian Universalist congregation, you might find that while we're known generally for a higher level of education as Unitarian Universalists, it might be like even that next level of education if you're coming into it from African American tradition. And I guess I wanted to say just a bit about touching on what we were saying before about the need to believe in something outside of oneself, and some folks of color have made that transition inside of Unitarian Universalism or prior to coming to it. And what comes to mind for me is just the legacy that we have of what I would call, and what I learned in seminary, as slave religion, where religiosity is about having a kind of cosmic overseer on a certain level. And all the implications of that. Not that that's everyone's belief, but certainly it's kind of hard to distinguish it, that there's some relationship there. I'm thinking about, you know, growing up in a household where God was referred to as the master, for example, and what the implications of that is over many generations. But it's quite a diverse group, I would say. And hopefully, and my hope, and even if you look at churches of color, I think it becomes obvious that people have, that even within African American churches, there is often like a class divide, for example, based on where people are, and that plays out in our Unitarian Universalist congregations as well. Gentlemen? Gentle people?
I think there's also a difference between the word that comes to mind, other than resilience, is the word loneliness. I feel like oftentimes, just when people of color feel like they've found a home, there's no critical mass in that home, and there's no other family members that may necessarily look like them in that home. And so what ends up happening is there's a feeling of spiritual isolation and even spiritual homelessness, in a sense, of where do I belong? Where can I fully express who I am without having to translate, like Carlton mentioned? And why is it that the translation is left as the responsibility of the person of color and not the dominant culture that exists in that congregation? And so those are the kinds of questions that I noticed reading the stories that I've read. And I think the other dichotomy is between lay people and clergy. So I have to admit that our denomination has done a terrific job over the years to build up religious professionals of color. And we resource this group of people with Finding Our Way Home and other opportunities for growth and development. I'm sorry?
What's Finding Our Way Home?
Oh, so Finding Our Way Home is an annual gathering which usually takes place around March in various places across the country for religious professionals of color, which includes ministers and religious education directors or musicians and administrators and other folks. And it's an incredibly enriching time because every time we gather together, we find out that we're actually not alone and that the issues that we're dealing with, other religious professionals are dealing with as well. And yes, there are organizations like DRUM, the Diverse and Revolutionary Unitarian Universalist Multicultural Ministries, but you know, those are kind of few and far in between in terms of resources that are available for lay people. So we're hoping that by lifting up these stories with the compilation of this book, that will amplify the voices and and hopefully too that we won't feel as isolated on this journey.
One of the things I found interesting is the diversity of the stories, that for some people, finding Unitarian Universalism was an amazing experience and they found a perfect home, and for others, well, they still identify as Unitarian Universalists, they haven't found a church home. And so I think that the people who come to our congregation, some of it, people of color who come to our congregation, some of it depends on what they find at the church that they visit. I've been in 7 congregations in the past 20 years, either as a member or as a religious professional. And in 2 of those, there was enough critical mass of people of color, and there was such a sense of radical hospitality in the congregation that folks of color did not feel isolated. Now, even in those churches, I personally experienced struggles as an indigenous person with misappropriation of our culture, and I've, you know, walked out of services angry and those kinds of things. And in those congregations, they took those as learning opportunities to fix what they were doing, to admit they had made a mistake and move forward. In other congregations where there's only a few of us, there is oftentimes this experience of being, well, tell us about your African-American experience. Or for example, in St. Louis after Ferguson, well, so what's it like being black in St. Louis? Or, you know, like, you become this token, this symbol. And I think for the folks who choose Unitarian Universalism, regardless of the church that they go into, they come to us because they believe in the power of community, the light of love, and the strength of justice. And they want to see that in their religion. And so I agree resilience is a big factor, particularly if they stay in a church that has not necessarily done its work and is treating them as a token. And I think that they come to some churches that are very welcoming or only attend churches that are very welcoming and not making them that token because those congregations have done the work of living their values as their culture.
Just a follow-up question is, there have been critical mass has been mentioned a few times. Is this critical mass something that is always necessary, or I'm just trying to see whether, well, does that mean just we should just bring in all these people of color to our congregation, and is that going to solve the issue?
Since I said it most recently, I'll respond to that, which is, again, in those churches, I'm thinking of the congregation that I'm serving now does not have a critical mass, and the people of color in that community had felt very welcome, and then when Ferguson happened, they didn't feel welcome anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think it can be situation dependent. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to have a critical mass for people to feel welcome. It's about an attitude of the community. Mm-hmm. It goes back to that kind of, how are we as a community? Are we talking to people because we see who we think they are? Or are we talking to people because we think being in relationship with people is an amazing thing? I think I gave the example earlier of the young adult group came out with a list of questions to ask during coffee hour, and one of them was, rather than asking me what I do for a living, ask me what I love to do. Right? So if you're at, what question are you asking? You're asking because you think this person knows everything about, you know, like, as an indigenous person, I often get the, okay, so what part Native American are you? Which is the racist question. And then the tell me all about your people question, which is equally racist, or the let me tell you everything I know about Native people.
Or your people.
Or your people, right. Yeah, let me tell you about your people. I'm like, you know, I'm Seminole. I think I know about my people, right? You know, exactly, right. Instead of saying, so what do you love about Unitarian Universalism, or do you have any pets, or, you know, just the kind of normal things that you want to know about people, right? Yeah.
So I think I've, or many of you have heard the saying, I believe Dr. King was the one that was quoted as saying this, in that 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings is the most segregated hour in America. And little has actually changed over the years. According to studies done, only about 8% of our churches can be considered multicultural. So I'm kind of a numbers geek, and I wanted to know, well, out of that 8%, how many people of color are in those congregations? Or how many people of a different ethnicity? Because a predominantly black church, for example, would still be considered somewhat monocultural, right? And so what's that magic number that would make a congregation multicultural? And the other question I asked was, how many churches within Unitarian Universalism are considered multicultural? So of course I went to the obvious and usual suspects like All Souls in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or All Souls in Washington, D.C. And colleagues were telling me that, well, we have about 20 or 30% people of color in our congregation. And so I thought, well, is that what it takes to qualify as a multicultural congregation, you know, to get that stamp of approval that all of a sudden we've reached the promised land? Or is it something more like what Sunshine was talking about? And suddenly, what Beth Zemsky said made a lot of sense. She said that diversity is about counting people, and inclusion is where people count. Yes. So I thought that was a radically clear and precise distinction between what we're really going after. So for those of us who are in more quote-unquote monocultural congregations, is the reason that we want to have more people of color in our congregation is so that we could tout to the rest of the UU world that, hey, look at us, you know, we're the good guys. We had this multiculturalism thing figured out. Or is it because we realize that we can never be whole and holy and really live out our values as Unitarian Universalists if we don't figure out this multiculturalism thing, if we don't live out our principles and practice of inclusion? Is that the reason why? So for me, what's more important is getting down to the root of it. I could care less if there's only one or two people of color in your congregation, but if culturally you are doing the work, that you're involved with the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, or you're out there building relationships in the community, that's what I care more about.
Carlton, do you have some comments?
Oh, do I? So I think I appreciate the direction that Jennifer and Sunshine are pointing to in terms of like the multicultural piece, and I think it's so important to get to our rationale behind it. What I fear sometimes in our congregations is exactly what Jennifer was just talking about, that the percentage of people of color in UU congregations is more about the comfort of the white people in those congregations than it is about spreading the love, or being the love, if you will. And so from that standpoint, I think the standard for being a multicultural congregation in Unitarian Universalism is 20%. Is that? Am I remembering this correctly? I mean,
I don't know.
Something like that. That's quite a low threshold. I mean, that guarantees that you can be a multicultural congregation without looking anything like the global majority, right? I mean, so that's a consideration that I have. The thing that I've been a Unitarian Universalist minister for many years now, and my observation is that in the absence of a mission that's thoroughly based on love, that's thoroughly based on being in relationship to one another, and being that we have such theological diversity, what I suspect has happened is that white culture has become the glue that holds Unitarian Universalism together. And I think the fear is that if you remove whiteness as being central to Unitarian Universalism could very well fall apart. So I think that's kind of like the fear that's back there. So whatever that's worth.
Okay, thank you. Since we were talking about what kind of people of color are in the UU congregations, I'd like to actually turn to co-editors, and then if you can just like quickly say who you are, maybe 1 minute or so. Would you like to go, Chandra, first?
Sure. You mean my background just briefly? Or
Whatever you consider, I mean, however you like the rest of us to know you. Without going through the entire story. Well, that will you will be able to read those stories once it's published. So,
repeat the question. I'm sorry.
Oh, so
don't talk about myself.
Well, so, well, should I say what are you or who are you?
Who am I?
Or just a little bit about. You, yes.
Well, without talking about myself, I'll tell you who I am. I've been a member of the UU Church for a couple of years now. My personal background, I think, is very similar to a lot of UUs I talk, whether they're people of color or otherwise. Well, my background, I come from a Christian background, was raised Christian. Church of Christ, I don't know if anyone's familiar with that, but you could call them fundamentalists, I think, evangelical / fundamentalists. And I was that for many, many years, really, for most of my adult life, as a matter of fact. But then I just got to the point where I just started questioning things that I had been taught all my life, things that I had not really questioned up to that point. And I just started searching. And I just started reading and questioning, and my local UU church puts on a number of community events throughout the year, such as concerts and things of that nature, and I had actually attended a couple of those, and I had picked up some literature and didn't look at it, just put it somewhere, but I kind of always had in back of my mind, maybe I should go to a service one of these days, and so one day I finally did. And theologically, in terms of my personal beliefs right now, I find that it's a perfect fit. And a lot of times, my Christian friends and relatives don't quite get it. I say, well, I imagine, you know, UU-ism is being a big umbrella. And you can kind of be whatever you want. And I think oftentimes that translates to a lot of people is, well, you're nothing, you know, if you're everything. But I think for me right now, and I just think everybody's on a journey. And I just think that we all have to kind of figure it out for ourselves. And for me, at this point in my journey, I feel that the Unitarian Church is a good fit. Now, that said, I'm also in the ordination process in the UMC Church. That is another conversation for another time. You have to read my story. But I will say that I don't find a contradiction there. Some people would find a contradiction, but my theology is such that I don't find a contradiction. But, you know, I feel that this is a good fit for me right now.
Thank you. Tim?
I'm Japanese, and Yuta here is Japanese, too. I'm Japanese-American. Yet, even though... Oh, I'm sorry. Even though we're both Japanese, Yudi and me, we're like in two different worlds, to be honest with you. And to be honest with you, I'm finding a lot of happiness here in the Unitarian Universalist Church, and it's because of my pastor at Troop Church in Pasadena. She made me welcome, and the church is, you know, they accommodate me, which is really great because, because of my last denominations, the headquarters, I'll be honest with you, they were racist. The members were racist. But the UU church are more opening. And I became a member. and I'm happy. But at the same time, when I was hearing the grievances, when I was hearing the angers, or read the angers from the book, from the letters, I said, I don't want to happen what happened to me and my former denomination in this denomination. So I said, yeah, let's write, you know, we should write a book to, you know, from preventing it from happening. And I'm glad I did it, because I really do love this denomination. I love the people here, and I'm glad I came here, and I'm glad I'm a member.
Thank you. So I actually came to your church as a staff, a pianist, but I really loved it. But my path hasn't been just straight. And you can read that part in the book, but I am from Japan, and my parents were totally anti-religious. So I came from a very non-religious background, but really always seeking something spiritual. And to me, the closest thing that feels, of course, culturally, is the Shintoism and the Buddhism. I consider myself a pantheist. I believe that God resides in everybody, everything, including ocean and mountains. So that's who I am. And let's just put it that way because of time constraints as well. But thank you for sharing who you are. Let's go to the next question. And this, I like Jennifer to take a lead. So what kind of challenges are there for people of color in UU congregations? I realize some of those already came out, but there are specific things mentioned in stories, and obviously you've experienced them or heard about them yourself. And you're also welcome to mention what actually worked.
So in my most recent context, I have 2.5 days left as plus one vacation day as the minister of the First Unitarian Church of Honolulu. And then I'm transitioning to become the Congregational Life Field Staff for the Pacific Western Region. But when I was first called to this congregation 4 years ago, there was actually quite a bit of a conversation with the search team about how I, as their newly called minister, could bring or could make the congregation more multicultural, right? So I'm the solution, I'm the savior, I'm the messianic figure to turn this congregation around. And one of the first articles published by the local newspaper had the headline of the First Unitarian Church of Honolulu calls its first gay Asian minister. And my rabbi friend called me up and said, when did you come out as openly Asian? And I said, well, I needed to do something to alleviate the fears of my congregation, because when I was going around during the candidating process, I was asked the question of, well, if we called you as our minister, wouldn't that make our church all gay? And I said, well, wouldn't that be wonderful? We'd be the first predominantly LGBT UU congregation in our movement. And I said, but the bigger question is, wouldn't that make our congregation all Asian? And then people were like, oh my gosh, you're right, you know? And so the point of me saying that is that I think people have good intentions, right? But the intent and the impact are not always the same. And again, you know, it brings me back to the question of, well, just because you call a leader of color, does that mean that the culture necessarily supports that? So that's one question. And the other, I think the other point I wanted to make in terms of a challenge, the challenge is that oftentimes we UUs think we're so smart that we have the magic bullet to solve this quandary that we've been struggling with for ages and ages, right? So we want to apply a technical fix, but it's really an adaptive question that we're struggling with here. And the adaptive question has to do with not where we're coming from, but where whoever it is that is walking through our doors is coming from. And the question, I bet you $1 million that I don't have. Is there room for me here? Do I belong here? Can I be my authentic self here? Can I be both gay and Asian and be welcome with open and loving arms? So until we could grapple with that question, I would suggest that we stop it with the technical fixes, that we stop it with the tokenization of just putting someone on the pulpit who's a person of color, or shoving them into the board, or putting them in the choir even though they can't carry a tune worth their lives. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I'm just saying, you know, these are some of the stories that we're reading about how we turn people off, and consequently, they become the nuns. So the nuns are not necessarily those who don't know about Unitarian Universalism. They're not necessarily seekers. They have found a faith that works for them, but the people in that faith, I don't know how many of you have seen that bumper sticker that says, "Jesus save me from your followers." You know, it's kind of like Unitarian Universalism, save me from Unitarian Universalists, right? So how could we stop turning people away, and how can we truly practice and answer the deep questions and yearnings that people come through our doors with?
Did he just solve all our problems?
Oh, I've been sitting with the words that Marlon said on Wednesday of adapting Langston Hughes, "Let Unitarian Universalism be Unitarian Universalism again, that religion that has not been but will be." I think that we have a lot of potential. I, like many people who are historically marginalized who have come into this religion. And I say this both as a Seminole, Cherokee, Dakota, and European person, as well as a transgender person, is I've had some crises of faith. And at some point, I just said, you know what? Heck with you all. I'm staying. That said, that's not an easy choice to make, right? It comes with exhaustion, and it comes with despair at times, and it comes with just all kinds of frustration. But I think that what we really have to work on is just what Jonifer was saying, is how do we do our own work, and how do we hear the voices of the people who are coming to us? Because so many have come to our churches and said, no, thank you. Not to our values, not to our theology, not to our great vision of what can be, but because we haven't figured out that we still need to become, that we still need to do more and grow and continue. And I think that I was teaching a class on classism, actually, and I asked, after some time of discussion, I asked the people in the circle to tell me how they felt. And the first four people went, and they all started, "Well, I think, dot, dot, dot." And we tend to do that. We tend to go to our thought place. But a lot of this welcoming has to do with being heartfelt and authentic, and not just mindful, but all of us, mindful and spiritual and feeling and all of it. And when we get into that place is when I think we're able to embrace folks who may not be from the same culture as us or those kinds of things and see people for who they are. But there are too many blinders up, and those blinders are really shutting people out from coming into our communities. The last thing I think I want to say is we also have this thing of transracially adopted children, and there's a story that hasn't been written yet, but hopefully will be in the book, by a man who is Lakota and was adopted by a family who's white and had to leave the church and find himself before he could come back, and struggled for years and has finally joined again. But there is something about the fact that we need to do those adaptive questions. of saying, you know, who are we and who do we want to become and who are we welcoming, and, you know, not that if we put so-and-so on this committee that somehow that's going to resolve our problem or those kinds of things. And I think we also have to be open to the knowledge that not everything is ours. As an indigenous person, the thing that really just makes me angry is every time we use a Native American chant out of context, or I love it, one of my colleagues was writing a book and was fact-checking a quote from the Navajo that she had used for years, and it turned out it was from a John Wayne movie. You know, and we have to be relational. You know, you have to do your work. You have to say, is utilizing this allowing for more connection, or is it just making me feel good, or just because I like it, I want to hear it, or is it putting me in relationship with people? So.
I think in a lot of the comments that you've heard this afternoon and that I read in the drafts of the chapters for the book, there's a lot of pain around identity inside of the association, both coming into it, because if one comes into Unitarian Universalism from another tradition, you have to leave behind something that was familiar, that was comforting, and that's true of any. How many come outers do we have in the room of in any way, shape, or form? You had to come into Unitarian Universalism from someplace else. Yeah, so I think, you know, if there's a hope that I have for it, I hope that, you know, somehow similar to what happened for me in relationship to the struggle for immigrants, of being able to make the connection through my understanding of through a deeper understanding of civil rights, of being America addicted to free or very, very cheap labor, and playing that out over the course of many, many generations. And it just so happens it's, you know, people immigrating from Central and South America who are most in the impact of that, as well as people working in sweatshops in China, et cetera. That if we're able to translate our experience of having come out of whatever context we came out of to be Unitarian Universalists, we might be able to find, that we might generally be able to find some place of empathy in that regard, and knowing the pain of leaving something behind in order to embrace a new vision that we can connect through that. Another challenge I think we face is also an opportunity, and that has to do with technology and the fact that fewer people are going to church on Sunday morning. So there's something new that wants to happen, but we are so thoroughly invested at this point in the traditional way of doing things of, you know, the 11 to 12 o'clock on Sunday morning, when that is starting to fall away. So there's a window of opportunity that's opening up for creating new online communities of color, if we will, different ways of gathering, small groups that might not meet on Sunday. So all of that needs to be taken into consideration as well. But it's a challenge because we are a congregationally based movement. But hopefully we'll be able to figure out some new ways of doing faith development and religious life.
Thank you. So now is the time for all of us to get into a conversation, but not like at the same time and screaming your answers. So I would like you to get into a group of four or five people, and please, please, please include somebody you don't know in your group, so you won't be just talking with people you know and you like and so on. And so first, please find the people, group, and then be quiet so I can let you know what I want you to talk about. Okay, so it looks like Most of you found your group, yes? And if you still haven't, please quietly move to a group that isn't too big, because time is limited. So I like each of you in a group to take turns to share the rest of the group for about a minute or a minute and a half what you can do personally to make your congregation or your Unitarian and Universalist context more welcoming. Thank you. So take turns, so no discussion, just one person speak for a minute or minute and a half and then move to the next person. Pardon? Okay, I will. So the first minute is up. 1 minute up. Next person. Next minute is up, so please go to the next person. Next minute is up. Next person.
Thank you.
Next minute is up, so please move to the next person. Okay, so did everybody have turn? Did anybody who has not gone yet? Okay, so one more minute. I wanted 4 or 5 people, but maybe some group is bigger. 1 more minute. So now at this moment, I would like each group to decide, designate one person's cool idea. If you like, whoa, I never thought of that. That person to come to that microphone, and I'm afraid we probably won't have enough time to go through every group. But in case if you hear like your idea already mentioned, please just go back to your seat. Yes. So if there was some like, wow, I never thought about that kind of idea was mentioned.
Gary, only the brilliant ideas.
Well, brilliant idea could mean, different people would consider different things brilliant. So yes. And then go ahead and just start sharing, please.
Several ideas, but a couple expressed this. And in spite of what Jennifer said, the face of the person in the pulpit makes a big difference.
Hi, I'm coming from All Souls in D.C., which has been mentioned as an example of a place that's very diverse, but it's still something that we think about and talk about and want to increase the amount of diversity. So for me personally, I'm going to start trying to attend the ADORE meetings, and ADORE, for those who don't know, is a dialogue on race and ethnicity, so that I can become more well-versed in the issues that are around that.
I'm Mary Murphy from Des Moines, Washington, the state, and there's two things that I like to do, and one is I've been with the congregation for 19 years, and so out of the welcoming room, I tend to connect with people, figure out their interests, and then I pull someone else that I know from the congregation and get them started talking, and then I take off and get other people connected. So I'm kind of a connecting person and help with the welcoming in that way. The other thing that I do that I love doing is we have chalice circles, our small group, intimate groups, and I do it on Sunday at 1, which is just a couple hours later than our coffee hour. And so I'll invite welcome newcomers. We always have an open chair. So,
okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My name's Jean Rivers, and I'm from San Jose, California, First Unitarian Church of San Jose. We reached into, we have a large Mexican community, And we reached into a need of that community as a way of outreach. They needed childcare, affordable childcare, and after school program. So that's what we set up.
I'm Charles Thomas from the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Flint, and my significant other Jennifer has been talking to me about this idea for a long time, and we talked about it in our group, and our group agreed this is the best idea to come out of our group. Simply letting more people of color know that Unitarian Universalism exists would really be a big advantage for us, because the message would resonate with a lot of people, but they do not know that Unitarian Universalism exists. By the way, this applies to not only non-whites, but whites as well. But just letting more people know about us and our values and what we stand for.
Thank you.
My name is Robert Dutton from Old Souls Unitarian Church in New York. It's not a very diverse community, I must say, but the community is welcoming in the sense that most members would be happy to interact with many other people, not only of African Americans, but of many ethnicities. Our group discussed the idea of having occasional meetings and welcoming people at tables and so on. At All Souls, we also have these small group ministries in which we meet in groups of about 5 or 10 people once every 2 weeks or once a month throughout the year. And they're not, and these are mixed groups. It's not all white people or anything like that. And I'm a scientist, and one of the reasons I came to Unitarianism is just because it has a tradition of supporting people who are agnostic and free thinkers. And having left the Catholic Church, I think that it's a much more welcoming, intellectually even, environment where you could don't have conflict between your investigations and what and some dogma.
Okay.
So
thank you.
That's how we feel.
Acknowledging to each other that white privilege does exist, including in our congregation. Mm-hmm. Taking steps to move beyond that, educating us how we can do that, including not just having white European classical music in our music programs, and reminding us from the panel that this really is about love, that we are all human beings. We have a common goal of love and safety across religions, across ethnicities.
I belong to a small Unitarian fellowship in Florence, Oregon. And our congregation, when we get new people that come in, we have a little questionnaire that they fill out. And then we make sure that we reconnect with these people. There's a few of us that have been, there's a main corner in our town, and we've been standing out on that corner for 8 years with signs, getting people to think about stuff and talking about what our philosophy is. And we've gotten people to come in that way, a lot of different people. They see what we're thinking about. We also have free lunches where we feed the people in town. And we get a lot of minority people coming in there. And so we talk with them and visit with them and make sure to reconnect. That's basically some of our ideas.
Thank you. Okay, I have to cut up to just the people who a gentleman with the yellow shirts, he was at last.
My name is Maria Cristina Blasidis Burgoa, and I am the first Latina lesbian minister hired at First Parish in Brookline, Massachusetts. And it's very much on my mind and my heart the issue that has been brought up time and time again about being seen as the token or the solution to becoming a more multicultural congregation. And so having to educate congregants individual seemed like a daunting task for me and not what I wanted my ministry to be forever or even for a year or a month, because I don't think that I have that kind of energy and I was not called to do that. But I wanted to invite people to buy into and embrace the notion of multiculturalism by looking around at our community and partnering with people, for example, who were anxious and happy to partner with us towards making the Trust Act a reality in Massachusetts. And so making my presence as a Latina minister from the pulpit be more real and not a token response to this effort, these community partnerships also make us go from the comfort zone inside our UU walls to the community. So we are going to them. We are working with them. They are setting the agenda for us to volunteer and for us to participate in whatever programs they need us to participate. We also started social justice classes, and we instituted in our worship calendar Las Posadas and Three Kings Day.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Becky Siebens from the UU Congregation in Needham, Massachusetts. One thing our racial justice task force has initiated is reading together in small groups a book called Waking Up White. It is, our thought was, before we wanted to do outreach work, we needed to have a much deeper sense of our own, having grown up as the dominant culture, to take a look deeper and see how are we now complicit in continuing the racism that exists in this country? What's our background there? So that we are more capable of seeing the world with fresh eyes. And I would say we have three, we're just doing it as an experiment right now with three groups of eight. And I think the conversations that are happening are surprisingly deep. We're finding it a useful place to start before we take action going outward.
Thank you.
Ralph Wyman, First Universalist Minneapolis, and I had said in our small group that I would be more courageous in confronting moments of privilege and so forth. And so I just want to invite the person who said, in spite of what Jonifer said, I see the opposite, to have a conversation with me when this workshop is over today, because I found that comment quite troublesome. And so I wanted to see if we could be in dialogue about that.
Thank you. So now it's almost, yes? I didn't understand. I didn't understand the comment.
That's not what I said.
It's true what Jonifer said, and having a person with a certain face in the pulpit makes a difference. Having more ministers of a wide variety of backgrounds makes a difference.
Thank you. Thank you for clarification. So the time is almost up, but so I have only 30 seconds for each person to say. If you still want to say something, I do have something to say, but the rest of you, if you like to say something, please do.
So the only thing I want to say is there's been a mention of social justice and the importance of social justice. Just a little brief announcement. I'm part of the Southern Region staff, and I wanted to remind everyone of the July 13th action that we're doing in Winston-Salem with regards to voting rights. There's like little tiny flyers that save paper that are back there on the table.
You about to say
whoever
something
wants
there,
to say, yes,
okay.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to tell a quick story. I did my internship at West Shore Unitarian Universalist Church, and we had an organization come in and talk about doing work with immigrants in the nearby town. And one of the things that we did was the covenant in Spanish. And you know, love is the spirit of this church. We did it 1 week. We just said, El amor es el espíritu de esta iglesia. And we liked it so much, the ministers, we did it again. And that led to a major conflict within the congregation about whether we wanted Spanish or whatever. And it led to an adaptive conversation about what it meant to be welcoming, and somebody said something horribly offensive to one of our Mexican-American members of the congregation, and that led to a moment of conflict and then healing. And so one of the things I want to say in all of this is don't be afraid of the conflict, engage in the learning.
If you look around you in this room and throughout GA, you'll notice that we are beginning to become a more colorful denomination and movement. So I would encourage you to keep struggling with these questions. And I'm just so glad that we're not having GA in Vegas, because what happens at GA ought not to stay at GA.
Well, in that spirit, Jennifer, and I was so touched by something that one of the speakers said out in the audience, and that is sometimes I think just in everything that goes on, we forget that we're all human beings. We're not representatives of a group. You know, if someone says, oh, well, that's a white man, is that the sum total of who you are? Does that begin to describe who you are? Or, you know, I'm whatever. You know, we're all human beings. And I think a lot of times that gets lost in well-intentioned conversation. You know, and I think sometimes we just need to come back to that. How would you like to be treated? And I think we have such an advantage as you use. We have such an advantage that needs to be spread out in the larger world, because UUs do have that intention. And you can't always say that about the rest of the world. And I think we ought to use that good intention to our advantage. Okay, you know, this is, may I quote a scripture? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I think we can all agree with that one.
Well, so Tim said he can give me his time. So all I want to actually say is we are trying to publish the book now, and the Faithify campaign has just been launched, and I left a whole bunch of little piece of papers in the back that has the link to that Faithify campaign. And if, let's say maybe if 200 people are here, if you each of you give, say, $20, we already top that campaign. So please take this and then consider giving, because we are not only trying to publish the book, but also try to do this kind of workshop in the East Coast. My church has embraced this. So if you want your friends in the East Coast to experience this, or you want to come again, please do give to the campaign. Thank you, and thank you so much for your engagement, and thanks to all the panel members, and thank you.
That's you. How you doing? All right. Oh, I didn't know you were here today. Oh, yeah. I didn't think you were going to come.
You would like this. It was so good. You know, talk to
cool, me. Cool. Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Glad you're here. I'm glad you're here, too.
Okay, okay, okay.
Wow. So I finally got to meet you. okay. Well, I'm coming. I didn't get that.
And we still have not recovered. Right. Right. Right, and it wasn't always so. In other forms, you know, like Roman or whatever. Right. Right, this was a particularly brutal form of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, because they recognized the essential humanity of the. If it's the same pattern as post-Reconstruction. Because, you know, right after the Civil War, a lot of good things were happening. Well, that's as long as the North occupied the South. I mean, you know, African-American senators were elected. People forget that. But as soon as the North pulled out of the South, you know, after those 10 years, it was like, and then that's when you, and it took 100 years. It took 100 years until the Civil Rights Movement to get the basic, you know, and so look at the progress that we made in the 60s and the 70s. And in the 80s, it started. We're right back, and I'm so afraid that, you know, it's going to take another 100 years to. They didn't have the 24-hour news cycle either. But you know what? Look at to ask your education, your religious education director about the life stories curriculum. Because people get together and they write in the church. So you would like that. Just got in town like yesterday, late yesterday afternoon. Yeah, huh?
Okay, so the next session is starting soon. So if you had been in a people of color group, you can certainly talk more outside, but let's just get out of here so that the next people can set this up. Thank you.
You're welcome to stay.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Or you can stay, but then be engaged in the next session.
T-shirts. I think Northern Sun had a sweatshirt, but She is, yes. Sure.
This run, and then we'll just give scene one first, and then I'll hand him scene two.
Yep. I couldn't even fit in there. I didn't even go because I couldn't fit in it. It was sad. Yeah, I know. I got it. I know how to do it.
This on. Yep, absolutely I do.
Yeah, but then we can't do the slides.
Yeah, we're up here, good point.
Or can we let the computer fit down here?
We can set the computer on the floor, right?
Or even if we just did it, like it's not just even reaching up to this point isn't that big a deal. Do you know what I mean?
You're taller than I am, but yes.
Okay, true. This cord, the projector cord, isn't super long.
Yeah. This isn't yours, is it?
No.
Is it working? No.
It is or is
it? I didn't hear it, did you?
No.
No. Let's try that hand. Oh, wait.
No?
let's make sure this one's working. This one was absolutely working. Woo! I'm going to check the one out.
This one, that one. That one's working out there.
We weren't planning on having a handheld, so we can't get it.
Right. It's not a big deal, but it's a bonus because it's left in here.
Do you want to sit at the table or do you want to be at the podium? Okay, at the podium. When they, I was thinking they'd share from that mic. Yeah, from there. Or, oh yeah, if we can. Does this one work? This one works. So we should just have them do it here. Yeah. They
can just line up. This mic is working.
Yeah.
And so is this one. They can pass it.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah, because it Celeste, so when you're describing, you can come out here and describe it.
No, because I wanted it.